it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top six at six.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
6.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is 6.
The top six at 6 on 720 WGN.
The chief, the boss... Devin Nunez gave a confusing interview to Wolf Blitzer yesterday, dug a hole even deeper, and now refuses to step down. Who does he look like?
Devin Nunez?
He looks like somebody. Is he like the kid you went to school with that was kind of annoying? There's somebody. Who does he look like?
The kid, you mean the kid on the playground who would go, "Your mom. No, you did."
Yeah, that's who he is. But essentially what he said is this. He said, I went to the White House, I went into a skiff, and of course we all have skiffs at our own house. These are secure compartments where we can exchange sensitive information without being bothered. Some of them look like, those moving compartments, those shipping containers, that kind of a look. You know what you're talking about, or what I'm talking about with your own skiff. But Devin Nunez says he went to the skiff on the grounds of the White House at the Eisenhower office building. And he went in and he looked at the information and he looked at the information and he looked at the information and he went and he slept on it. And he said, I've got to tell the president. This is information that was already at the White House. He also refuses to name who let him into the White House grounds. As you may know, the only way you get in without being let in is going over the fence, and that never works out well. Mm-hmm. So he's got a lot of questions to answer, and frankly, he made it way more confusing than it needed to be. Next! The president's approval rate, not good.
Mm-mm.
Not good. The new Gallup poll has him at 36%. Ask me who he's tied with.
Who is he tied with, Steve?
Sharknado.
Sharknado? You're kidding.
You look at Rotten Tomatoes, and you look at the Rotten Tomatoes score, Sharknado 3, 36%. Now, here's the good news for Donald Trump. He's ahead of Paul Blart Mall Cop. Paul Blart Mall Cop is at 35%.
Oh, and it's not even regular Sharknado. It's Sharknado 3.
Sharknado 3. That's right. He's tied with Sharknado 3. Next! Jared Kushner seems like a nice enough fella. Look, I don't know him. You don't know him. We don't know him. He's got a beautiful family. Takes Saturdays off for the Sabbath. Seems to be some positives there. But then if you dig a little deeper, you hear a lot of people using the word slumlord, terrible person, mean beyond belief. These are all things that the New York papers have reported through the years. He was a multi-millionaire in his early 20s. He hates Chris Christie because Governor Christie at one point was a prosecutor who put Jared Kushner's dad in jail for tax evasion. So when Chris Christie wanted to be a part of this administration, Jared Kushner got a little revenge and convinced a father-in-law, Donald, not to hire him. But that's not important now. What's important now is he's got a big new job. He's got a big new job. He's Director of Innovation. Now, isn't that Todd Manley's title?
That's content, I believe.
I think there's an innovation in there
maybe.
Somewhere.
Somebody here has the innovation title.
Yeah. Does Todd Manley, our boss, have ties to the Russian government and Vladimir Putin?
I don't think so.
No.
Well, you would say that since you're probably in cahoots with him.
Shh. Yavul.
Yeah. And by the way, Cahoots is just outside of Moscow.
Yes, you can
find it on a map. But along with his big new job, which basically allows him to redesign the government any way he wants, and why wouldn't we turn that over to him with all his vast experience as a guy that owns real estate? He also is revealed to have met with a Russian bank president. The Russian bank president was named by Vladimir Putin to the job, and that bank is under U.S. sanctions. So you're not supposed to meet with him. Jared Kushner did.
Maybe he thought he was just opening up savings account, trying to get that toaster.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Could be. Yeah, I think, actually, you get a toaster and you get your own VCR copy of Sharknado 3. Next! you know, we've talked about this for a long time. Orion Samuelson and I have agreed on this for years. I know a lot of people don't like it. Andrea, I know that you have carpal tunnel from shopping while you're at work.
Never.
Amazon will start charging tax nationwide on April 1st.
You knew it was coming.
It's the only way to make it fair. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see this first. You got the behemoth doing it first. Other people are going to do it as well. This could save some retail. It's not going to fix the retail problem, but it's going to level the playing field a little bit.
You know what, Steve? Amazon just opened its first brick-and-mortar store in Chicago last week. It's on Southport in Lincoln Park, and they're charging tax
there as well.
That's
the bookstore, right?
Yeah, that's the bookstore. And they sell, you know, other items that you would find in a you know, the old-fashioned bookstore when you actually used to go in and buy books. But they're going to be charging tax there, too. So,
Listen, I nobody has to like it, but it's the only fair way to go. That's it. Next! Maxim, not just a name for a condom. Maxim is one of the brothers on Dancing with the Stars. What's the other brother? Is it Nipsey?
Val.
Let's go to Mary on the seventh floor. It's Val.
Val, yes.
Maxim and Val. Maxim injured and is off Dancing with the Stars until further notice.
He hurt his calf, last night in practice.
Oh, walk it off.
Steve, you remember when he was in studio? You guys
hated me.
No, he had an admiration for you.
Oh, boy.
Was he the one with all the jewelry? Had all the bling?
Yeah.
And I danced with him. Don't you remember he dipped me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I got dipped too.
That was the most exciting thing ever.
I offered to take him outside and rough him up, and of course he wouldn't do it. He was too busy selling jewelry.
Poor
but
Max.
Maxim, we wish you nothing but the best.
He'll be back.
Coach Q says it's a lower body injury.
It's a lower body injury.
Definitely lower.
But I think your big headline off Dancing with the Stars last night is clear. Charo is muy loco.
Oh, big time. She's nuttier than
so
ever.
Annoying. She's
Charo
crazy.
Went bat-ass crazy, and I don't think it was an act.
No.
She didn't like her score. She was going to go down and beat the snot out of one of the judges.
Bruno.
Bruno, yeah.
She told him she S-U-C-K-S's. I don't like to say that word.
English sucks.
What did she say?
That's what she told him.
She said his English sucks.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
She just spit it out. And then, she grabbed the microphone. She kept grabbing the microphone. Security had to actually step in.
Yeah.
And then her poor dancing partner, Keo, had to grab her and bring her off the stage. Literally.
Yeah, drag her back.
Yeah.
She makes Cloris Leachman look like the sane contestant.
Oh, yeah.
Remember when she was on there?
Bring back Cloris, for sure.
Yeah, Cloris was fun.
She was fun. She wasn't
crazy old lady way. And finally this. You remember John Gosselin of John and Kate Plus Eight?
Oh, yeah, the husband.
Yeah, remember they got a divorce?
Mm-hmm.
And then remember it became Kate Plus Eight?
Yeah.
And then Kate said, the kids really miss having their own TV show. Can they please have a TV show again? Meanwhile, John was just floating around in the ether. He tried a bunch of different jobs. Last year, he was a club DJ. Hey, he's got a new job.
What?
He's a stripper.
Oh, why?
Come on.
Why? Who's going to go pay to see that guy strip?
Well, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't see it.
Maybe it's like a whole Reality Stars strip club.
His kids are going to love that. That's a great example.
I don't see it.
Great example.
I was obsessed with John and Kate Plus Eight because I really liked the way she was so organized.
Oh, no. She was a huge...
No, when those babies were... She first came home with all those children and she had like each container laid out. She knew every diaper and meal and budget-wise that it was only going to be $3.06 per kid per dinner.
Steve, I always thought Kate was a little cray-cray.
Uh-huh. That's why Mary likes her.
And if anyone... Yeah. I didn't like the haircut, but if anyone ever saw her laundry room, she had two washers and dryers.
She needed them, though.
I know.
I said this on the air. I think she's beautiful. With longer hair, she looks great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not... I never liked that short hair, that whatever that is, the back.
But the brand-new reality strip club opening soon. John to the spotlight dance. John.
Yes.
There's your top six at six. We'll revisit those as needed, and we'll come back with more, including the All-State Kid of the Week coming up on 720 WGN. All right, Dave, I know you got a sportscast coming up. I do have a couple of quickies here, and I don't want to jump all over your sportscast.
No, go ahead.
Obviously, Tampa Bay, in a very annoying fashion, came back and beat the Hawks. I know you're going to be talking about that.
Very annoying.
But Dave, here's my solution to the last couple of games. You got to let in less goals.
That would be a good start.
You want to write it down? Let in less goals.
Got it.
Right. To win in hockey, you need to score more goals than the other team. And when you give up 12 goals in two games, well, you're not going to win those games, Dave.
No, that's way too bad.
About and keep your stick on the ice?
That's good.
Keep your stick on the ice. That's a good, you know what that is? That's a good way to let in less goals.
That's right.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those.
They're going to be fine.
They will be. They just got to get to the playoffs. It's about so get through this final week or so.
Florida.
Yeah, well, that too. And they got to go. And they go to Pittsburgh now.
Yeah, piece of cake there.
Yeah.
The people of Oakland haven't been screwed enough by the NFL, so they got screwed one more time yesterday, and not in a good way. The Raiders are moving to Vegas.
Raiders are moving to Vegas. We just don't know when, but they will be moving.
I have a question. Is Las Vegas not allowed to have a professional sports team? Is that why they haven't had them before?
Well, that was their second in less than a year.
Oh, yeah, okay. The NHL starts this fall there, and there used to be a feeling there would never be professional sports there because the leagues stayed away because they were worried about the association with gambling. But, look, gambling's everywhere anymore, so what's the point of staying away?
Right.
Yeah, your bookie's on your smartphone, or at least mine is. Mm-hmm. And, by the way, I'll say hi to Mom for you guys. Hey. The Oakland Raiders, I'm sure they'll keep the name the Las Vegas Raiders. I don't know. Did they have a stadium for them?
Well, they're building a stadium there that they're going to share with UNLV, but it won't be ready till 2020. So they're going to play a couple more. How awkward is this? It's like they've broken up.
They're in Oakland for two more years?
Yeah, they've broken up with their girlfriend, but they're going to stay together for two more years. Yeah. I mean, it's at least two,
that ain't right.
And maybe longer, according to the owner of the Raiders, because they.
Oh, that ain't right.
Yeah, this is going to be very uncomfortable. Why didn't they just wait? Maybe they could have gotten a deal done with Oakland. The mayor of Oakland says they were ready to go with a plan for a new stadium, but I think they saw the dollar signs waiting in Vegas and they couldn't wait.
Yeah, and on top of that, you've got the ugliest, and by that I mean potentially the meanest fan base. With the Raiders, who I believe may kill their own team before they get to Vegas.
Yeah, it's going to be very uncomfortable.
And lastly, Dave, I know you join me in this. I want to salute the big white boy, Luke May, who got a standing ovation at his business class yesterday.
Wasn't that great?
After the game-winning shot, he showed up at school for his 8 a.m. business class, and the room went nuts.
Yep, business 101. He walks in and gets a standing O. The professor was leading the cheers for him.
That's pretty cool. And he's a North Carolina kid, right?
North Carolina, yep.
All right, so Dave will do the rest of sports. Whew, I don't know why you forced me to do all that, Dave.
Sorry about that, Steve.
Dave's slacking today.
Telling you. Big story time now. Andrea's here with it on the Steve Cochran Show at 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents The Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, another great Kid of the Week, an Allstate Kid of the Week in just a second. Andre, this is your favorite part of the show, isn't it?
Love this part of the show. Oh, my gosh. And we always, every week I say, this is the greatest kid. Next week, this is the greatest kids. They are all phenomenal.
Right, right. Well, it's not the Allstate Bad Kid of the Week. I mean, you would expect them to be pretty good, wouldn't you?
Well, I think so, yeah. They're actually exceptional. They're not just pretty good.
If we end up doing the Bad Kid of the Week, we'll do it in a completely different part of the show.
That'll involve people like we know and us and
everybody that got into show business.
Exactly.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Let's meet our Allstate agent first. It's Mindy. Is it Blanco or Blanco?
Blanco.
Thanks. So, you know, 2 years of Spanish, I should know that, Mindy. And I know your agency's in the same neighborhood as our Kid of the Week. We're going to have you introduce us to her in just a second. But let's talk about you for a second. How long have you been an agent?
12 years.
And tell me about your business.
The main thing that I'm so proud of, definitely trust. It's very easy to show when we have the Allstate name. It's just an easy way to walk in. Clients want to walk in and they ask questions. So it's a very smooth transition to talk about insurance when they see already the name of the company. So. I'm very proud. I'm very proud to work for Allstate.
And you've got a great commitment, I know, not just to the Hispanic community, but also to Hispanic youth and empowering Hispanic youth,
Absolutely. I'm very proud of that.
And there is a couple things coming up we want to talk about, but the Allstate Foundation is joining Facing History and ourselves in believing that people make choices and choices make history. And it's an international education organization that engages students in examination of racism and anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. And the foundation has a series of Facing History and Ourselves youth-led community conversations going across the country. Do you go to some of those? Do you lead them? Do you host them? How does that work for you?
We definitely go to different schools as well. I am on board with a non-for-profit. And in the area where, as well, our nominee that we're going to introduce today, winner, Brianna, that school basically is... one of the schools and many other schools that we try to be participant of, because it's obviously very important to influence the kids, and they have so much to teach us, actually.
Sure, sure.
So, yes, it's very important to be there in the lives of the youth.
Why don't you introduce our All-State Kid of the Week?
Sure, I'd be very honored to. Her name is Brianna Hampton Murph, and she is a junior at Intrinsic Charter Schools. And as I said, it's walking distance from the office, so it's very nice.
Hey, Brianna, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Now, you're a junior or senior?
Yeah, I'm a junior at Intrinsic.
Oh, it's a big year, Brianna. Yeah. How are your grades?
They're good. I have A's and B's.
Okay, let's go through it. What do you have an A in?
I have an A in English, history.
Mm-hmm, good. Good.
Probably B's in like math and science.
Yeah.
Not much done.
Yeah, that's why we're in journalism, huh?
Andrea, what did you get in science and math?
I was actually okay in science. I would do, you know, A's and B's. Math, not so great. If it wasn't algebra, I wasn't a Brianna, Steve. Let's just put
it
that
you,
way.
Vandeveld, how'd you do?
In math and science?
Yeah.
Ugh, not good. Not good. No, not chemistry, calculus. Ooh, math.
Right.
I actually hired a kid to dissect a frog for me, but that's a long time ago. Dave, you got into Northwestern, so I assume you got all A's?
No, I did not. It was different back then. Plus, but my SAT verbal was high. My math, not so good.
What did you get on your SAT?
I don't remember. I just remember
yes,
that my
you
verbal
do. What'd
was
you get?
Good. I don't remember.
Was 800? The scoring system different then? I mean, I know they used an abacus.
It was an abacus. That's right. They had to wait till sunrise to actually figure out your score.
They would use the clay to write on the wall of the caves.
Right.
Yeah.
This is a different time, Brianna. You understand. who is Mr. Walsh to you?
Mr. Walsh was my freshman Facing History teacher. Well, actually, he didn't teach me Facing History. He taught me history in general, but he took it a step further outside of the classroom to teach me personally, like Facing History.
Well, here is what Mr. Walsh had to say about you, if you don't mind if I brag a little bit. First day I met Brianna Hampton Murph, I knew I was going to see and be around a special student. Ninth grade World Studies class, she was by far the least nervous student filing in on that first day. Why were you so cocky about World Studies, miss?
I'm just interested in history and reading. I know my strengths. So.
Oh, that's cool. That's great. Yeah. She was confident and eager to learn. As the year went on, I quickly realized she had an aptitude for social sciences and a passion for social justice. Where does that come from?
I'm inspired by my mother, for the most part.
And your mom is a community activist by at least leading the way for you?
Yeah, she motivates me along with others, my teachers and things like that.
Great. Mr. Walsh continues, I was impressed with her ability to build empathy for marginalized groups and equally impressed with her ability to influence her peers. It was these two attributes that I saw in Brianna that influenced me to nominate her as a Facing History student leader. I knew she'd do well as a Facing History student leader, but the fact that she's now being singled out as a leader among leaders has exceeded even my lofty expectations. Congratulations, Brianna. Keep up the good work. And the cool thing about that is you're going to remember Mr. Walsh for the rest of your life. Everybody's got teachers that just absolutely impact you, and you look back and you go, well, that person was really special to me. Mindy, I bet you have one.
Yes, absolutely, and it's so true. I mean... What we as adults, you know, there's a saying as far as with Maya Angelou, too, to be patient and to listen. We were there once. And it's so true. I mean, teachers influence, parents can influence, obviously, their surroundings. But in my high school, I mean, there was a couple, actually, I can remember. Funny ones, you know, serious ones,
sure.
But definitely impactful that you knew that they had heart and passion to teach.
Well, Brianna, I went to school in the 70s when dinosaurs roamed the earth. And I had a guidance counselor named Mr. Head, and he was an old hippie. And couldn't have been a nicer guy. And he helped me get through it. And I know Mr. Walsh is one of probably many, because you're a student leader, that you're going to remember as well. All right, so give us a lesson here. Let's talk from your perspective. You're 16, 17. How old are you?
16, going on 17.
All right, you're 16. All right, so you'll be 17 soon. What do you want for your birthday, by the way?
I have a lot planned.
She's a lot planned.
Here comes a list.
Right, here's her list. Uh-oh, here she goes.
Give us a list. We'll steal from the prize closet. And I don't mean literally steal. We own this stuff. But Brianna, the from your perspective as a 16-year-old, what do you wish adults knew about getting along better, and what you try to teach your kids that you deal with? And from a leadership standpoint, what do grown-ups need to know a little bit better?
I believe grown-ups just need to know that everyone is not against you. And I think that's something that's hard for even my age group to understand. Mm-hmm. A lot of people feel like they are the victim or something like that. And like I just feel like anyone is in your best interest. Everyone can help you in any way, in any sort. So if you just, like, try to see what a person can do for you, then you'll be fine.
I see, and that's great. Correct me if I'm wrong. I see less prejudice and less bigotry in your generation than in previous generations, and that gives me hope. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, I think you're right.
So because you guys don't label. You know, and previous generations, I mean, everybody labels to some extent. Right. But previously, you know, if you were a kid that, you know, maybe was depressed at school, you were labeled and you were picked on. And if you were a kid that looked a little different, you were labeled and you were picked on. I know some of that still goes on, but I just feel like it's getting better, and I hope that's true.
Yeah, I feel like my generation is more accepting to the differences that may come within all different types of people.
So this the student leader with Facing History, what comes next? You got other events coming up?
I have a lot of things coming up, focused on big tests like the SAT and like trying to get accepted into big programs such as like Genesis Works or Chicago Scholars.
What do you think you want to do long term? What do you want to, you know, when you're out of school?
I'm pretty dedicated to wanting to be a lawyer when I get older.
Oh, nice. Excellent. Wow. Can I get your number?
Right.
Right now? Steve, I seriously see Brianna doing something in politics and maybe some community activism.
Oh, amen to that.
Any political aspirations.
Yeah. We need politicians that don't suck, Brianna. So I don't want to put any pressure on it. Hey, Dave, could you be her SAT tutor because of your incredible history with your SATs?
Well, on the verbal side, I'm okay, but I don't think Brianna really needs my help.
Yeah. I think Brianna could help Dave, actually.
Yeah, I think maybe I'm the one who needs the help. I'll take the SAT again.
It's a pleasure to meet you both, Mitty and Brianna. Mitty, get the number out for your agency, by the way, if people
sure.
want to call.
Thank you. It's 773-384-6500. And we're right on Diversity and Costner.
And you go to the Allstate website, you can find out how to be your own agent. It's a process they're proud of, and they should be, and they're always looking for more good people to get into the business. And, Brianna, it's really a pleasure to have you on the show. Brianna Hampton-Murph, I see nothing but great things for you in the future. You're already great, but thanks for being on. And Andrea is going to tell you what chintzy prizes we're willing to give you today.
We're giving you some great prizes.
What is it? Tell me.
Steve, all you have to do is nominate a kid for Allstate Kid of the Week. A kid you know could be featured right here on the Steve Cochran Show and win great prizes. We are giving you today an Amazon gift card.
Good.
And a gift card for a Lou Malnati's pizza.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
That's pretty good. That's good. That's like $1 million when you're 16.
Right. Sounds amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Now, Brianna, last thing. Is there anybody you want to say hi to or suck up to because a lot of people are listening right now?
Yeah, it's a lot of people. Well, no, I won't make it long. But I just want to say that I appreciate my advisor, Abina Barma, who actually joined me today. And I appreciate my parents for just making the amazing person that they created.
Yes.
Good job,
amen,
Brianna.
To that, yep.
And for everybody else that didn't get mentioned by Brianna, she has you in her heart and on a list, but she doesn't have all day.
Right. I love everybody.
So let us know what you end up doing for school. And Mindy, nothing but good luck with you. And,
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody who joined us from Allstate as well. So you guys have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
There is our Allstate Kid of the Week, Brianna Hampton-Murph. All right, let's do this. Mary, do the traffic. We'll come back with more on 720 WGN. Back on the Steve Cochran Show, and thanks to everybody at Allstate. Did we do a head count on the Allstate people, Andrea?
Yes, we did. We did. Mindy was here. She had a couple of her affiliates here, and she just gave me, she's in the Hermosa neighborhood on West Diversey. Okay. She just gave me the name of one of the best Mexican food restaurants in that area.
What is it?
Poncitlan, it's called.
What is it?
Poncitlan, and Ponce doesn't own it, so I knew you were going to ask that. But
how do you spell it?
It's Poncitlan. We were talking about good restaurants. She's in a wonderful area, just full of fantastic restaurants, so she gave us some tips on some of her favorite restaurants. We're going to go on up there and maybe grab some lunch sometime.
All right. Well, that works for me.
Okay.
Coming up here in a few minutes is Tim O'Brien. Tim O'Brien is a guy that knows Donald Trump extremely well. Wrote a book about him, and one of the main books about him, and he's a regular on CNN now. We can talk to Tim O'Brien about not just Donald Trump, but about Jared Kushner as well. Here's a story I think you might enjoy off the on the heels of the Allstate Kid of the Week. Getting bad grades has to mean consequences of some kind. You know, Dave and, mm-hmm. and Mary, I think the three of us, we had pretty good kids. I really never felt like I had to punish my kids. Did you, Dad?
No, never. My kids did very well in school.
Yeah, my kids were pretty good, too.
Right, and they behaved, and they were
behaved.
Respectful.
Yep.
I think they didn't tell us a few things, though, of course.
Yeah.
And there was no social media back then, too.
No, my kids, there was social media.
No, for us.
Yeah. Oh, for us,
yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what one dad did when his kid got bad grades and didn't seem to care. He's an NBA fan. He showed up at the Cleveland-Charlotte game last Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, everybody holds up a sign. He held up a sign calling out his son for sucking at school.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, what a nice dad.
That's terrible.
Did they pull him
Not
out of
really.
The stands?
Not really. They showed the sign. He held up the sign. He called him out by name and suggested that, get your grades up. Next time you'll be here with me.
Oh.
That was pretty good. I like that.
It's like sports shaming or shaming him into, you know, wanting to be at the game.
It's like,
I mean, I bet that got the point across.
I think there's nothing wrong with that.
He's
nothing.
Yeah, but you guys, I don't think, I couldn't see either of you guys doing that to your kids.
Well, didn't have to.
Well,
but
I think
if, you know, we're lucky, but I think if you have to, being creative, I like it. I'm at the game and you're not.
Beats hiring a plane skywriting.
Yeah. You suck.
That's Surrender
too,
Dorothy.
That's too expensive. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently it didn't work just pulling him off to the side and saying, you know what, your grades are bad. So
yeah.
I'm sure he tried that first. So
you took it to the next level.
Yep.
I'm just trying to figure out parental skywriting of your kid sucks.
What do you think about that?
I think it's limited in business scope.
Yeah,
why
suppose.
Not try it? Let's do the Express Quick here, sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. You know the deal. If the Hawks don't get it done, we don't spend a lot of time.
The Lightning win this hockey game 5-4.
Wow.
Okay.
And again, that's the entire replay of last night's game. Hawks were up 4-1 at one point. Wow. Wow. Jake, you want to take a minute of business here, and we'll come back and do the news? All right, we'll come back with the news next, and then Tim O'Brien on POTUS on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Chairman Nunez has confirmed that he was on White House grounds, and so I will leave it up to him and not try to get in the middle of that.
So nobody was sneaking around. All it was just a place where I had to go to be able to review this information.
Who cleared you for admission?
Well, I'm not going to get into how that process works.
It would be very difficult to maintain the credibility investigation if the chairman did not recuse himself from matters involving either the Trump campaign or the Trump transition team. There's just no legitimate reason to have gone to the White House at night to obtain information and then later share it with the White House instead of sharing it with his own committee.
Admission? Well, you got to have a ticket. Devin Nunes, the kid that annoyed you on the playground, is now the head of the House Intelligence Committee. As Tim O'Brien joins us now. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Good to be here, Steve.
And I see you regularly on CNN, of course, read you in Bloomberg View. And you know Mr. Trump well because you made a valiant effort to get through a book process with him without killing him.
He's very likable in person. I will always say that about him.
The Trump Nation, the art of being the Donald. All right, before we get to him, though, let's talk about Devin Nunes. Do you have a theory on what's going on here? This can't be just, you know, the kids sucking up to the president.
Well, I think the simplest solution here is that they should take the whole investigation away from the House Intelligence Committee and appoint a special prosecutor. Because there's two parallel things going on here. The first and most important thing is an exploration of whether or not the Russian government interceded in the 2016 election to try to tilt the outcome. And that's a nonpartisan issue. I don't think we'd want that to happen to either party or any candidate in a U.S. election where a foreign power can play a role. And that's a serious problem. There's enough evidence of it. It should be looked at. The second issue is, in the course of investigating that, were there leaks of information, classified information, that compromised people's privacy? That's also a worthy thing to explore. The problem that's happened now is that this has become a political football within the House Intelligence Committee, with the lead quarterback being Devin Nunes. And he is focusing entirely on the leaks and entirely, it would appear, on protecting the White House rather than overseeing a clean process. And the Democrats, of course, are more focused on the Russian side of this. And I think it's reached an impasse. And I think it's very hard for Congress to investigate another branch of the government or itself when the stakes are very high, and the stakes are very high in this one. So I simply think it should be taken out of the Congress and put in the hands of a special prosecutor.
Yeah, and in doing that, you do build some trust back into it. It's not a simple process, but it's a process that I agree with you needs to happen. But is it possible that he is putting all of his credibility at risk, if it's not already gone, and making a jackass out of himself internationally and globally and intergalactically, because he is in the intel that he found? Because I can't think of another reason why he would be so wound up to take it down this path unless one of the names he's trying to protect is his own.
You're talking about Devin Nunes here.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think the problem with Nunes is you want someone involved in intelligence supervision who is circumspect and respects the process and isn't grandstanding and isn't seeking publicity. And none of those things seem to apply to Devin Nunes. He's been fascinated, I think, with being in the spotlight on this issue. His story has changed over the last 2 weeks on multiple occasions, both in terms of his sourcing for the information he has, the number of people he got in touch with to enter and exit the White House, how he accessed secure servers to get the information. He's claimed that the White House was the only place he could access the information, but he happens to sit on the House Intelligence Committee, and he has secure servers at the Capitol.
That's bizarre.
So, yeah.
It's just bizarre. Andrea, I want to ask you about the Kushners. Andrea, you go first.
I want to ask you, Tim, about Ivanka's sway over President Trump. Many at first saw this as a good thing. She grounds him as much as he can be grounded. Others, though, Tim, I think see it bad because of the catapulting of Jared Kushner.
Well, Andrea, I think one of the things that people have hoped for around President Trump is that he would surround himself with high-quality advisors. You want that, I think, in any chief executive. And there were hopes, I think, that people like Rex Tillerson and General Mattis would be offering top-tier advice that comes from decades of experience and their own expertise. I think what inevitably happens in Trump land is that he always defaults to his family. And in this case, it's Jared Kushner and his daughter, Ivanka Trump. And I think they're both capable people. They certainly, however, are deeply lacking in experience around public administration and even business experience. They're just very junior jammers in this whole mix. And they're being given lots of influence and lots of responsibility, and I don't know that they're up to the task. And in Jared Kushner's case, I just wrote a column about this yesterday. He's now been tasked by the president with, in the president's own words, solving the Middle East peace problem. And then yesterday was given the portfolio to basically overhaul how the entire federal government operates. And I think those would be two tasks that would challenge the most capable of people, but certainly maybe well over the head of a 36-year-old whose, you know, public administration experience has been about 2 months.
Yeah, and he's a real estate guy. And I'm not knocking real estate guys. He's had a tremendous amount of success separate from his father's money. But he's a real estate guy, and local New York media has been crushing him for years as a bad guy as well. And I think we got enough bad guys in this administration, which brings us to the boss. Has he learned anything in the first 70 days?
Unfortunately, I would say no. I think he's gone as far down the rabbit hole as he could, which is unfortunate. And I think it's not a surprise to a certain extent. Trump has spent the better part of the last 45 years not taking responsibility for his own mistakes and inflating his own track record as a business person. And all of that kind of came to surface around the healthcare debate. Everyone would have benefited from that being an event in which good legislation came out, the problems with Obamacare were addressed, that a new plan that appealed to conservatives could have been engineered. But to do that, you have to be a team builder, you have to be a consensus builder, you have to understand the policy, you have to be strategically disciplined, you have to make it about the process and not your own ego and spin. And Trump did none of those things. And then when it blew up, he first blames the entire Democratic Party. Then he personally blames Schumer and Pelosi.
Right.
Then Saturday morning, he goes after the conservative wing of the Republican Party. And by Saturday night, he appears to be colluding with Fox to go after Paul Ryan. And basically what he ended up saying was, this is everyone else's fault except for mine.
That's the part that I think it makes all of us crazy who haven't known him as long as you have known him. Is this childish inability to accept any responsibility. And again, I've said this on Twitter, I've said it a bunch of places, and I've certainly said it in public a million times. I don't know anyone in my life, I don't know a single grown man or grown woman in my life who is incapable of saying they're sorry. And I think that's a real window into his dark side, which to me is a disqualifier from the word go.
Well, all of us make a lot of mistakes in our lives, and you only grow by looking at those mistakes and the reasons for them and trying to reposition yourself. And he, through most of his life, has been insulated from the consequences of his mistakes by his wealth and I think by his own ego. And where that'll come home to roost now is the whole healthcare legislative effort blew up on them in a very public and withering debacle. They now have to turn to tax policy, which they probably should have done first,
right,
before the healthcare policy. And it doesn't appear that they've got any kind of a legislative coalition in place to move forward on the things they want to do on tax reduction, and they want to deregulate. Those are two big policy goals sitting in front of them that are going to be made very hard by the problems they had with the healthcare legislation. And the question there then is Trump going to learn from these mistakes? One would hope he could, but history would suggest he absolutely won't.
You think he regrets running?
No, not at all. I think he's having the time of his life. He probably doesn't enjoy the rigors of the office, and he's clearly not a student of public policy. He's lazy. He's intellectually undisciplined, but he loves attention. The federal government is paying for him to go to Mar-a-Lago every weekend. He gets free advertising for his clubs every time he takes a foreign dignitary down there. And he's the center of every social media broadcast and print discussion going on right now, which for him is nirvana.
And last point, as a narcissist of the Olympic level, does he have any understanding of how serious this Russia problem is? Because, again, if there's nothing there, he could help tamp that down very quickly by saying, I want a full investigation, I want it done no matter where it leads, and I want the American people to be able to trust this administration, which, of course, he hasn't done. And he hasn't said anything negative about his buddy Vlad. This could end very badly for him. Is he in touch with that, or can he not allow himself to even think that?
I don't think he is sophisticated enough about foreign policy and about judicious executive management of the nation's national security interests to be aware of that at all. Had he been aware of it, he wouldn't have invited Putin to hack Hillary Clinton in the middle of the election, which he did. That's just an extraordinary thing for anybody from any party to do. It's not patriotic and it's not wise. And now he's living with the consequences of that. And it will, it's getting closer and closer. Jared Kushner is now going to be questioned by a congressional panel about his contact with Russian bankers during the transition. The significance of that one is a tower that the Kushners own, 666 Fifth Avenue in New York, has burdensome financing. A lot of debt is coming due on the building. And there's a question as to whether or not Jared Kushner was meeting with overseas bankers during the transition to try to get a financing package together.
Yeah. For people old enough to know the reference, it's like a Get Smart episode. You know, it's just waiting for chaos to be. It's all chaos. It's just unbelievable. Great job as always, Tim. And I'd invite everybody to read Trump Nation, The Art of Being the Donald. But certainly you're a great follow on Twitter at Tim O'Brien, O-B-R-I-E-N, and at Bloomberg View. Nice to talk to you again.
Thanks, Steve and Andre. Nice seeing you both, talking to you both.
Thank you, Tim.
That's a, you know, that's a, Andre, am I right? That's a confidence builder, isn't it?
I completely agree. Completely agree. And you know what? There's a part of me that I don't have a problem so much with, you know, because think of all of us. You would surround yourselves with people you trust, your family and whatnot. But I think he hit the nail on the head, Steve, with there's just no experience either, you know, nationally, internationally, or with trying to solve the Middle East peace process. I mean, that's been going on for hundreds of years.
I don't care how smart your son-in-law is and how much you love him. He's not ready to overhaul the entire government.
Exactly.
Traffic from Mayor. We'll come back and give away some Hawks tickets. Stand by for that. Oh, John's written another riddle. Stand by for the Hawker riddle. That, of course, is from the musical director of the program, and that would be your friend and mine, John DeCoss. And John couldn't be with us today. He may come in later in the week because, you know, he's got a button-down operation where he's trying to write more riddles.
You know, when we're dying for some muffins, I mean, come on, it's been 2 weeks.
Come on. But the riddle business, it ain't what it used to be.
No.
Yet he sweats and bleeds for you.
Really?
Yeah, I'm really not selling this for I even believe it. Right. All right, so I'm going to read the riddle, and then the first correct caller at 312-981-7200 will win. You want to start with Jake with caller 7 on this, or do we go with caller 1? Like first correct caller or starting with 7, or what do you want to do? You want to work pie into this? What do you want to do?
Let's go first correct caller. Early first worm gets the bird sort of situation.
Correct caller.
What did I say? Early bird gets the worm. There we go.
All right. First correct caller. Construction began after World War I. It was 1920 before I was done. I was planned to link south to Northside Parks, the double-decker Jean-Baptiste landmark.
Okay. 1920. Did
a lot of things built then.
Don't even say.
Did you cover that?
Construction began after World War I, but it was 1920 before I was done. I was planned to link south to Northside Parks, a double-decker Jean-Baptiste landmark.
Oh.
You know what it is?
I don't. I don't.
I don't
I'm completely stunned on this.
First correct caller, 312-981-7200 from the devious mind. Mm. The devious mind of John DeCoste. New York Times bestseller and now investigative journalist Annie Jacobson is out with a new book called Phenomena, The Secret History of the U.S. Government's Investigations into Extrasensory Perception and Whether or Not There Are Aliens Living Amongst Us, which reminds me, Steve Grzanich, you love this stuff, right?
He does. If he were sitting up there, he would tell you he
can't
loves
see his chair from here.
That stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There he is.
Oh, here we go. You said alien. You said outer space.
I love all this stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, so I have a question or two ready for Annie, because I see this sort of as kind of the same as the movie with Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones. What was it called?
Men in Black.
You know, Men in Black.
Yeah, Men in Black. I think, Steve, that your head might pop off at some point. You might be one of the aliens hiding amongst us.
No, I think I'd be one of the people finding the aliens, because I tend to have open a mind.
Good cover, Steve. Good cover.
That was a great show. Remember the X-Files?
Look into these black glasses.
Uh-oh.
Steve's got one of those lights, too. It'll make you forget everything.
Exactly. That's it.
Yeah. Construction began after World War I. It was 1920 before I was done. I was planned to link south to Northside Parks, a double-decker Jean-Baptiste landmark. First correct caller to tell me where I hid the puck based on that riddle. You're a big winner of Hawks tickets. Back with the big story next. We have a winner. Let's go to Jake and Mary, and Mary and Jake, and you guys can tell me who the winner is.
I believe it's Debbie. Isn't it Debbie, Mike? It is Debbie.
All right, Debbie.
That is a great impression of Jake and Mary.
What's the answer?
What's the answer, Steve?
Or Dave and I. Oh, the answer. The Michigan Avenue Bridge.
Oh, yeah. That's right. This
the
was a tough
Michigan
one.
Michigan Avenue Bridge.
As we stare
it's
at
perfect.
It right
now. Yes.
Let's go to Debbie. Hi, Debbie.
Hey, how are you?
Did you know this right away?
I actually did know it right away. I thought of two things it could have been, and I was just debating between the two, and I thought, no, it's got to be the Michigan Avenue Bridge.
What was your other?
It was the L, the elevated.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
There goes our next riddle.
Debbie, did
Thanks,
you?
Thanks, Debbie.
Debbie, did nice. You did you remember seeing Dave's report when it reopened
okay,
in 1920
please,
on the
please.
News?
No, I don't think I did.
Yeah.
Thanks, Debbie.
Debbie
wasn't
Debbie's
around
young.
Then. She couldn't have seen
Debbie's,
it.
Debbie's younger
no.
than us.
You probably studied it in history.
Well, I'm sure that's what it was, yes.
Yeah. Plus, it was hard to see Dave because he'd be the photographer at times and he'd be under that black curtain when the explosions went off when everybody had their picture taken.
And the light bulbs would fall crashing
done?
To the ground.
Done?
I don't know. We're here till 10.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
On Twitter, at Cochran Show, New York Times best-selling author Annie Jacobson joins us now. Andrea Watcher, the people she thinks about, talks about, writes about, I think it makes her very dangerous. Very dangerous.
Mm-hmm, I think so, too.
Annie's book is called Phenomena, the Secret History of the U.S. Government's Investigations into Extrasensory Perception and Psychokinesis. Nice to have you on the show. Good morning. Whoop, not hearing her. We got her?
I think she's there. Annie, you with us? There she is.
There you are, Annie. Hi.
Good morning.
Nice to talk to you. Annie, start by explaining what psychokinesis is, please.
Psychokinesis, also called PK, is the ability to move matter with your mind, something that some people will tell you is pseudoscience, and others will tell you is part of the ability that the government is super interested in.
And extrasensory perception, or ESP, that's as simple as me having a sense of what's coming, isn't it?
Yes, and can get very specific. It's really a form of divination. So the idea that you can access knowledge that is unknowable by a means other than the five known senses. Again, on one side of the aisle, people will tell you this is pure bunk, and on the other side of the aisle, the scientists that I interviewed, many of whom worked for the CIA and the DOD, will tell you that this is a real phenomena and that the government is acutely interested in tapping into the powers that lie therein.
Well, there's the five senses, Andrea.
Yeah, and Annie, you know, this is so interesting. You talk about the sixth sense, which is kind of what I think you were alluding to. Do we all have a little bit of that in us, a little bit of clairvoyance, or is it just certain select people who have that?
I think that's a great question, and that's why so many people are interested in this subject matter, I'm guessing, because they or perhaps a family member have demonstrated that ability in varying degrees. So the people who are really talented at it, the Mozarts, if you will, are the ones who are sought after by the government. But, you know, and it's interesting that you use the word spidey sense, because when I began researching this book, I thought that the programs were buttoned up in the mid-90s. And that's where I got a lot of declassified documents from the CIA regarding those programs. But lo and behold, I found out that these programs continue today, but they have a totally different kind of nomenclature, if you will, like a language that DOD uses, whereas in the 90s it was called remote viewing. No one wants to go near that term now because it's got a stigma attached to it. So instead, for example, the Office of Naval Research is using a program, and they refer to it even in their public press releases. They call it the Spidey Sense. Behind the scenes, they make it sound very technical by calling it anomalous cognition. They also call it advanced perceptual competence. Really, what it boils down to is, you know, seeing the future. And it began The modern program began with some experiences that soldiers were having in Iraq, where they were out on patrol, and someone would say, there's an IED ahead, stop. You know, that simple of a kind of ground truth.
Wow.
Lo and behold, that IED would go off, and the Office of Naval Research has now embarked upon this multi-million dollar program to learn how to enhance that capability in
the
soldiers.
Sure, of course. Could save lives. Phenomena, the secret history of the U.S. government's investigations into extrasensory perception and psychokinesis. Steve Rusanich, you know I say at a time like this, buy two copies. You're careless. You'll lose the first one. But then again, you knew that, didn't you?
I knew you were going to say that. I've already bought three.
That's your psychokinesis. All right, ask Annie a question.
Annie, I'm just kind of curious. You know, if we have all of these, they're called dark projects. I mean, will we ever see if this is really happening because of the secrecy involved and some of the private companies that are doing some of this research? Will any of this ever come to our knowledge and be out in the public?
It's a great question, and I think that the answer is always yes. I believe that as a journalist, especially as someone who is constantly requesting FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, and actually getting them often. That's what I base my books on. But these programs in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, as I write about the history of it, were all called Special Access Programs. SAP is the name that the DOD uses. And they're safeguarded when they're in existence and for decades afterwards under these extraordinary access restrictions like you're talking about that put them into the black budget, make them a black program, and no one knows about them. So it's very tenuous about, you know, getting information about what is going on today. I was surprised the amount of information I was able to get, but I think it has to do with the fact that many people, you know, going back to the earlier question, are a lot more interested in this than you would think. And as we move into this age of technology, people are saying, wait a minute, let's look at this stuff from a neurophysiological point of view.
I know you got to run on this, but is the government so concerned about hiding this because they feel the general public would find the government crazy if they knew what they were up to, or is there another reason?
I believe it's the first part of your question, mm-hmm. because there's so much stigma attached to this. I mean, you have to really accept the fact when you go into this world that the phenomena, if you will, because there's also things like map dancing where you kind of like hold either your finger or a swinging charm over a map. I mean, that sounds bananas. And yet, time and again, as I write in the book and report in the book, this delivers intelligence to the intelligence community, and they are kind of shocked by it. But none of this has anything to do with the scientific method, which all scientists agree are these kind of five steps of research. In other words, experiments have to be repeatable to be scientific. You can move from hypothesis to general theory. And here you have, you know, ESP, psychokinesis, reportedly going on for thousands and thousands of years, but it's fickle. In other words, it cannot be repeated. And scientists, hard scientists, people very against this kind of any kind of examination into this, really become incensed and say, how can the military be working in these programs that are not based in the scientific method?
Right. And then, of course, it comes down to funding and all of that, so they do have to keep it secret. Anyway, congratulations. Nice work by you. And let's all get Phenomena, the secret history of the U.S. government's investigations into extrasensory perception and psychokinesis. Annie, if you would send a signed copy to Steve Grzanich, he'd love you forever. And please sign it with his given name. Yeah, there you go. Sign it with his given name, which is Chewbacca.
There you go. Thank you.
And thank you for being on, Annie. We appreciate it very much. Steve, I'm watching you. You know that. You know that.
I kind of felt your eyes glaring at me. I'm not even from beyond. Yeah.
Did you guys ever get the feeling? Did you get the feeling where, you know, you go into a scenario and you think, I've been here before.
Oh yeah.
I've relived this moment. I don't even know what that would be called. It's not ESP, but
deja vu.
Yeah, it's like that feeling of I've been here and I've you know, either lived here or worked here. Isn't that wild?
I'm completely psychic. I know exactly what all of you are thinking before you think it.
Okay, what are we thinking right now?
We have to go to a break.
We do. That's correct.
Before we go, can I just mention how much money that you and me and all of us are spending on some of these black projects? I mean, it's hundreds of billions of dollars.
Wait, but how does Steve know?
We know some of these price tags. We just have no idea what they're doing with the money.
Yeah.
I'm sure we do there, Area 51. Phenomena, the secret history of the U.S. government's investigations into extrasensory perception and psychokinesis. If you don't mind that title, you're going to love this book. and she does great work. And Andrea mentioned something to me when Steve was talking to Annie, which I think is true. She's cool. Yeah, we're talking about Annie now.
Yeah.
What did you say? She's cool, but she's kind of scary or
wacky, but
yeah,
interesting.
Wacky. I don't know that we'd want to be locked in an elevator with her.
No, but think of the stuff we'd learn.
Yeah, I suppose. All right, Mary with the traffic and then more to come. Dean after 8. Let's see if Dean's still alive after his bout with the flu on 720 WGN. A week from Saturday, another Iceman production. We'll do stand-up comedy at one of my favorite stages in Chicago, the Metropolis in Arlington Heights. Andrea, you still going to show up?
I am. I'm ready. We're going to have a lot of fun.
And you've been fine-tuning and honing your material?
No, not yet. I have to do that. That's on my to-do list.
You plan on honing or fine-tuning?
I think I'm going to hone and fine-tune.
I think that's probably a good call. This will be your third or fourth or fifth time? How many times have you done?
This is either my third or fourth. And thank you for letting me do this. It's very fun. And our audience is very kind.
The idea that you say it's fun says a little something about how sick you are.
I know. Wacky.
It's stand-up comedy at its finest. You can tell because I'm choked up. And John DeCoste, the Riddler, will be there with us as well. We're going to play the match game live on stage. We'll have prizes to give away. And I might even regale you with a true tale of me in a hospital gown. Huh? That's worth the price of admission.
Wait, are there pictures of this? Because you do a slideshow usually during the comedy shows.
You know how much you love the slides.
I do. They're funny.
MetropolisArts.com or pick up the phone and call the box office. But there aren't many tickets left. 847-577-2121 or MetropolisArts.com for the Metropolis in Arlington Heights. Stephen Colbert last night tried to break down what this means that the son-in-law, Jared Kushner, is now in charge of innovation. Listen.
White House just announced that Trump's son-in-law and leader of the preppy camp across the lake, Jared Kushner, will oversee a broad effort to overhaul the federal government. And the government desperately needs overhaul. I mean, somebody keeps putting totally unqualified people in charge of really important stuff. That's got to stop. Kushner will become the head of something called the Office of American Innovation. Vague, but still better than the original title, the Bureau of Obvious Nepotism. But Kushner's job will be to lead a team to fix government with business ideas. And you know he's got great business ideas, like being born into a wealthy real estate family, or marrying into a wealthy real estate family. Why hasn't the government tried that? New office will be staffed by former business executives and is being described as a SWAT team of strategic consultants. Kushner has a bold vision for the office, saying the government should be run like a great American company. And if they can't do that, run it like a Trump company.
Well, Stephen Colbert from last night's Late Night. You know Colbert is regularly number one at Late Night now?
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood, well, kiss me good.
Well, I may have been in the hospital, but Dean sounded sicker than I did yesterday.
Yes, I did, but I think I sound better today. And you know why?
Why?
I've had an apple, and an apple a day keeps the
doctor.
Makes
you sound better on the show?
Makes you.
Isn't that the old saying?
I think so. I'll check with my committee of old wives later and see what they have to say about it.
Got a lot to talk about. We got Adele. We got Pharrell. We got other people that rhyme with Adele and Pharrell. The Fuller House stars. There's some news there, and Jim Gaffigan's coming back to town. What do we know? Was it the flu?
For me,
yeah,
it was. It was exactly the flu. I actually went to the doctor this time because I got, you know, the 1-2 punch was pretty hard with this my second time. So I had a chest X-ray because I like leaning up against the coldest metal objects that you can find in any
totally
hospital.
I just did that last week as well. We could have gotten a bulk discount.
Oh, that's nice. Maybe like a Sears photo album kind of thing.
Yeah, now mine was done by a guy who said, "Show me sexy and sell it." Is that uncomfortable?
That's a little weird. I did not get that. But there was a lot of readjusting, and I mean of the X-ray equipment.
Sure, that absolutely.
That was going on for me.
Do we know if it's on the internet yet?
I have not posted it yet. I'm working out a deal with TMZ to see if I can make a little money on the deal, because there's nothing more attractive than an X-ray of my lungs. A lot of people have been trying to get sneak copies of all that.
Well, I'm trying to get people to buy into pictures of me in a hospital gown with little flowers on it.
Right.
And so far, no website is buying. But I'm sure it's just I'm asking the wrong ones.
No,
I'm sure there's a buyer out there.
I picture that, Steve, those long underwear. Remember, you guys, when you used to be able to unbutton the backside, the buttocks area? That'd be a nice pattern for you guys.
Yeah,
that's going to be our Christmas card.
I just want you to know that, like Supreme Court justices, I wear nothing under my hospital robe.
Okay.
And I wear four or five different things under mine.
Get out of my head, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Get out of my head.
All right, so we'll come back. We'll do the list in just a second. Anything happening at Channel 9 this morning?
No, it's a very quiet morning there. There's pretty much me eating the apple was the highlight of the day here today.
Do you have a lot of the tech guys come around to watch you?
They do. It's like, you're going to finish that? You're going to eat that whole thing? It's like, it's one apple. I'm not having like Thanksgiving dinner here. It's one apple.
Next week, I believe on Monday, it's the first day of the new 4 o'clock newscast. Is that right?
Is that April 4th?
Mm-hmm.
That would be that's the first day then.
Tuesday.
Is it Tuesday?
April 4th.
April 4th.
Yes.
We've got Ben Bradley. Mm-hmm. You remember him? He used to be the publisher of the Washington Post. He's now working here at WGN.
Looks great, I got to tell you.
He does.
For a guy that's been dead for a couple of years, he looks
terrific.
That's
right. He's going to be anchoring the 4 o'clock, 4 p.m. news with your girlfriend, Lourdes Duarte.
We love Lourdes. By the way, Lourdes called me a jackass in Spanish the other day. I was very flattered.
Very nice. Very nice.
I believe it was El Jackasso.
Only took her 4 or 5 years to finally catch on. That's nice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, Dean, at 8:40 this morning, the surprising history of your favorite curse words.
Oh, really?
Who on the show enjoys cursing?
I do.
We all do, I think.
Not me.
What? Only in the car.
Oh, I curse all the time.
You do.
Yeah, you do.
In several languages. Several languages, too.
That's right, Dean. We're multilingual.
Yeah.
With our cursing.
I've tried to curse less, but we've got the A word, the F word, and other words that will tell you where they came from.
Oh, my.
That's at 8:40.
You have the Q word?
Well, that's one you're going to have to explain to me off the air.
I just wanted to see if you had one. I don't have one either.
A Q word.
I just figured that you might make one up.
I've got to tell you, the flip card in my head started going pretty quickly there.
I know.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9 and 720.
Hello from the other side.
Careful, careful.
Careful, you're going to break those stitches.
Adele's in the news as we rejoin Dean from Channel 9. You're still at Channel 9, aren't you?
I do not see Ron Majors anywhere. I'm going to say yes.
All right. I have an Adele story here as well. Someone in Australia went to see Adele in concert, and they're selling a sandwich bag filled with air from the concert.
Hello.
Genius.
It's Adele air.
That's genius.
It's a bag of air. It was bagged on March 13th, just a couple of weeks ago. Bids are starting at... Well, they're not quite at the starting point, but $155 is where we are right now.
Seems like a bargain to me.
$155.18, and you can have a bag of Adele air.
The air that at least passed over her skin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Mm-hmm. Probably.
What's your Adele story?
And, well, here's the other thing related to the Adele Australian concert. Her show there was at an outdoor venue, 100,000 people attended that show. It is the largest concert that's ever taken place in Australia to see Adele. And she's been selling out venues, not quite like that, but she's been selling out venues all over the world for the last 15 months. Her tour is now finally come to an end.
You know, the power of her is, and Whitney Houston had this to a degree as well, because Whitney Houston couldn't dance. don't know if you ever saw Whitney Houston in concert, but she was very uncomfortable moving around the stage. And Adele doesn't. Adele just sings.
Yep.
And people, you got 100,000 people showing up for that voice, because that voice is, that's when God went, okay, Adele, here you go. This one's for you. Enjoy it.
And put a little extra air in there so they can sell it.
Steve Dean, I'm considering bagging air from your conversations each day. How much
good.
Do you think I
ours
could?
Ours would be more expensive because our air is pretty much always hot air.
Yeah.
That's hello. A good point. That's a good point. Hello!
So...
Hello.
So after this 15-month tour that she's been on, selling out shows like crazy, Adele says she doesn't think she's going to tour anymore. She's not comfortable with it. She's
She has like a serious stage fright, right?
She is very serious stage fright. She doesn't think that she's very good at it. She said the whole thing makes her feel vulnerable and uncomfortable.
Okay, at what point? Listen, I love her. But at what point, when 100,000 people pay to get in, do you go, I'm not very good at this?
And plus, she had those two bad experiences at the Grammys.
Well, the where she stopped the song and started over,
which I thought she handled great. I loved that moment.
I would think that it would be very sad if that happened, but
she's got to keep touring. It's not up to her; it's up to us.
After she's going to take some time off. She's been touring for 15 months. Can you imagine being on the road for 15 months? That's got to be exhausting.
Sounds like my commute.
And she probably misses her little kid. Doesn't she have one or two kids?
I think she has one. Yeah. And probably, I'm guessing.
He travels with her.
Is under 4 years old, probably travels with her. But still, you want to be in your own place. You want to be in your own bed and all that. So she's
give her a year off, but then she's got to come back. What are you going to do, sing around the house? Come on.
Yeah, I agree. But
she's going to come up with a song, Goodbye. She's got to. Come on.
She'll just be singing to her kid, Mom, shut up.
Maybe she'll just do a series of albums of things like Hello, Goodbye, See You Later.
Greetings.
How you
Adele.
Doing?
Yeah. Adele sings greetings.
Yeah, the greetings.
Great title for
the greetings
album.
Series.
Or in different languages. Bonjour.
Yeah.
Hasta luego.
How you doing? What's up?
Ciao.
Well, I'm sure she's not coming on this show. All right. Well, we want Adele to keep touring, and that's enough of that. Pharrell, the musical. I might go see this. Where is it? When is it?
This is going to be made by 20th Century Fox Movie Studios. It's going to be a musical based on Pharrell's childhood. Growing up in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Was he happy as a kid? And I mean, happy.
The project is going to be called Atlantis and is described as a Romeo and Juliet style story.
Oh, Christ on a bicycle.
That's all I know about it. I liked it better before I knew more about what this is was going to be.
By the way, I don't know if you know this, but Abigail Grace Cochran, Happy is her favorite song.
Well, of course. It's a jolly little song. Now, if this was a musical about like Pharrell's hats, something like that is very interesting.
Adele sang a song about Pharrell's hats. It went like this, nice hat.
Hello.
That was the song. Yeah, that was the song.
It's going to be part of the greeting series.
Well, I love Pharrell, but I don't like the idea of that musical.
So that's going to, it's a couple of years, so they're working on that. But they announced that it actually is going to take place.
Who's Barry Jenkins and why do we care?
Barry Jenkins is the director of the Academy Award-winning film Moonlight.
Oh, sure.
The film that almost did not win Best Picture this year. They just announced his next project, which is going to be for Amazon. He's going to be doing a series based on the award-winning novel The Underground Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead. So he will write, he will direct, and that is supposed to be out next year.
You know, the Underground Railroad in part ran up through upstate New York where I grew up, and there are several homes still there where you can see the trapdoors in the floor and the places where people were hid.
We have several here in the state of Illinois. We did a story on
kinda
this
cool.
last
Especially
year.
Especially when you're a little kid. It's really cool.
Yeah, where you see those trapdoors and shackles that are, you know, still in the area. And, like, you know, some very poignant signs of that era in America.
You're starting to fade on me, aren't you?
Based on...
starting to lose it a little bit, aren't
based
you?
Based on Pharrell's childhood.
Come on, Flemmy. You're starting to lose it.
I can't wait to tell you about Jim Gaffigan, our pal Jim Gaffigan.
You don't want to tell me about the Fuller House story?
Well, I could tell you about the Fuller House story also.
Go ahead. Tell me about it.
I don't know how much time we had left. But
wouldn't be the Dean segment if we weren't late.
Like that's ever stopped us before. Jodie Sweetin, who played the younger of the two daughters on the show, her ex-fiancé, she had a restraining order put out on her ex-fiancé.
Yeah, me too.
He was threatening violence with a gun.
She
broke off their engagement. It didn't go well, apparently, according to reports with him. They had the restraining order. That didn't stop him. He showed up at her in front of her house yesterday. She called the police. Police came, and this guy, Justin Hodak, was arrested by police.
Well, good. He sounds like he's dangerous and needs to be put away. You know, there's plenty of crazy women out there. But, guys, why do we always hear so many stories about guys who can't accept a breakup and they lose it? You know, I mean, life goes on.
Yeah.
It sucks for a while, but life goes on.
If it's over, it's over. You're going to show up at somebody's house with all, I love you so much, I'm showing up with a gun.
Yeah.
With all these crazy stories that we cover, you know, obviously for the TV station, oh my gosh, we always say that, whatever happened to the good old-fashioned breakup?
Right.
I don't love you, you don't love me, we move on.
Is that
too mean?
That's right.
Is that too cynical?
No, because of the old days.
No, because when women break up, they just figure out they're done, and they do kind of cut it off. But even so, I don't mean literally cut it off, but even so, men could handle it better.
Hey, Lorena
Bobbitt. Whatever happened to Lorena Bobbitt? Do we know?
Let's bring her out right now. Lorena Bobbitt, everybody.
A special guest on the show today. Nice to see you.
All right, and finally, our friend Jim Gaffigan, who I haven't spoken to in 6 months.
He is going to be here in Chicago in October. He signed up for a show at the Chicago Theater in October, sold out. Mm-hmm. Added a second show, sold out. Added a third show, sold out. And now, yesterday, they announced there will be a fourth Jim Gaffigan show. It'll be October the 14th, Chicago Theater, and tickets are going to go on sale this coming Friday morning at 10 o'clock through Ticketmaster, box office, all the usual places. But I thought, what a nice time to listen to a little of our, not even a full minute of our pal Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah, here we go.
Hilarious.
There's a McDonald's denial. We all embrace it. No one's going in there innocent. We're walking into a red and yellow building with a giant M over it. What's this, a library? I'll get some fries while I'm here. Because those McDonald's fries are truly amazing, right? Has your mother ever made anything as good as a McDonald's fry? Not even close. We lie to ourselves when we eat McDonald's fries. We're like, oh, they're so thin, they couldn't be fattening. You ever eat too many McDonald's fries? Of course not!
Our pal Jim Gaffigan, October the 14th, fourth show added, Chicago Theater. And we can't wait. He's going to be in town for 4 days. Certainly we'll have him on, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And we, we've talked about it on the air and off the air. Chicago's the best city for him. I mean, he does great all over the country, but he is a huge deal here. I mean, he never has a problem selling tickets here.
You want nonstop, constant laughs, follow Jim Gaffigan on Twitter just for the simplest, funniest, hilarious posts. He posted a picture of him, his wife, and his five children at a restaurant, and the kids are going crazy at the table. And he said, just another peaceful dinner with the Gaffigan family. And you know, his kids are going nuts at the table. It's just awesome.
Well, I hope he gets another shot at a sitcom, the one that he did last year, Wrong Network.
Yeah.
And didn't get a fair shot. It was very funny.
That was very
funny. All right, buddy. Thank you.
All right. See you later.
And big story coming up. And then, where do your favorite curse words come from? We'll get to that, too, coming up. Big story after this on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Sing off the air just to get into practice for this segment. Who do you think curses the most on the show? Probably me, I guess, huh?
You know what? I don't think you curse.
You can tell me. I won't hold it against you.
I don't think it's you, Steve.
They think it's me, Steve.
Yeah, I think it's Andre.
Yeah.
Do you guys really think I swear that much?
You do.
Yeah, well,
Steve, do you?
Really? No.
Thank you, Steve. See?
No.
Never on the air, obviously.
Well, this is objective. This isn't like...
But then...
It's not a big...
Then there was a study one time I did read, though, and I told you this, Steve, that... and I think I told Mary Sandberg, Royal Comcast Sportsnet, that intelligent women tend to swear more. Intelligent women tend to swear more.
Where did you read that?
That was a study that I put on Facebook once, too.
Uh-huh. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Well, you know,
the study said.
My kids are grown up, right? Mary, your kids are grown up. Dave, your kids are grown up.
Yes.
And it's always weird for me to hear them swear. You know, you hear them curse.
I still get mad at them.
You know, I think about the fact that Ross worked here for like a year and a half, and the things he heard me say. Kid must be in therapy.
He doesn't swear. I never heard Ross swear.
I'm not proud of it, but I just...
It just happens.
I'm saying he heard me.
Yeah, but we've never heard him.
So I don't think I was a great... I thought I was a really good example for him until he started working with me, which is why he came up with the slogan, the hardest part about working for you is I have to work with you.
And by the way, it was a Huffington Post study.
You know,
she went...
Okay.
It was a HuffPost study.
We believed you.
Intelligent people use more swear words, according to that study.
I like to quit swearing, but I don't think I've really put any effort into it.
Yeah,
so
I
maybe
either.
I don't want to quit. Maybe I like it too much.
I hear you. Here's
the background. And Sandberg, you need to get out on this too with your.
Oh my God, I love swearing. I like to swear. I swear in front of my parents, and I also swear in front of my stepkids.
That's great.
And I don't apologize for it. This is a real world.
See, I won't swear in front of
Seriously?
Kids.
Yeah, I mean, not like running at the mouth.
We've had the talk about swearing in front of your kids. I didn't swear in front of my kids until they were old enough to accept what a disappointment I was.
Oh, I swear, and it scares them because I don't apologize, them. And they're waiting for the apology. Sometimes Patrick will say, don't worry, I won't repeat that.
Notice how no one's responding.
Yeah, they'll drive you to therapy.
Yeah.
All right, so this piece, I don't even know where this is from, but this is they leaned heavily on the online etymology dictionary. And others. So let's start with the S word. The S word, of course, we all probably use it during the course of the day. You don't have to just stub your toe. According to OED, the S word has been used to mean an obnoxious person since 1508.
Wow.
How about that?
Dave, when you covered that
story. Christopher Columbus was still around claiming he discovered America. 1508, 1922. Here are some of the phrases. 1922 was the first time somebody said, I don't give an S. Huh. 1937, you're up S Creek. 1942, you're on my S list. That seems very hip for 1942.
Steve, was there really an S Creek? Or was that just the expression?
I don't think there was literally an S Creek.
You know, like
if
the
there
boneyard.
Was called Permaseal.
Yeah, could have been a badly polluted creek.
Yeah, know. Called Permaseal. In the 60s, S-faced hit. I would have thought that would have been later. And then 1989, the first time we allegedly heard the phrase, same S, different day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I use, S-faced, I probably have dropped that a few times.
I'll tell you, I use the S list quite a bit. There's a lot of people on my S list.
Well, yeah, your list is.
We're not on that list, right?
Oh, please. Of course we are. How about bull S? Bull S. This is a word that you're now hearing on cable news referring to the president. That's not necessarily a good thing for America.
No.
You also hear it in arenas when there is a questionable call.
Yeah, right.
Chanted in unison, always.
Oh, speaking of my son, that's a sweet memory that I'll share with his daughter at some point when she's much older.
Oh, no.
But the first time I ever took Ross to a hockey game, he's like 3 years old, super cute little kid. We're on the old stadium. Bad call. Everybody starts chanting, bull S, bull S. And, you know, it was like slow motion, Dave, as a dad.
Mm-hmm.
You look over and you go, uh-oh. And then he starts chanting. And everybody in the whole section's laughing because it's so darn cute.
When my sister was 11, Steve, she did not like butter on her vegetables. And my dad, we were eating dinner, and she said, are there butter on these vegetables? And he said, no. And she said, bull S.
Oh, that couldn't have been good.
And he said, what did you just say? And she said, nothing. And then... then she tore off to her bedroom and he chased her down. And it was, you know, my mom and I were like frozen at the table.
Right. Because you've got to make sure as a kid that you keep your cursing away from your parents. By the way, what would happen if the stepkid started cursing in front of you?
Oh, please, Steve.
Catherine says frick.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's the same as cursing because she means it as a curse.
But what if they start dropping F-bombs in front of you and go, well, you say it?
Well, I don't. So? I mean, are we going to pretend that they're not going to swear at some point?
Well, or, no, as a parent, you don't get to go, so? I'm asking what you do.
Here's the thing, Steve. I'm the stepmom, so I don't have to enforce all the full rules.
I get to do the fun stuff.
You enforce the ones you want to enforce.
You have the asterisk by you.
I don't think they're going to start like saying it constantly or whatever. Though my 9-year-old niece did use F for her. She yelled at her dad and used the F word. But her mom swears a lot too. So
we had one of those yesterday. My little godson, he said, guess what they called? Guess what? You know, this one kid who ironically, his name is Mikey Heideman, one of our producers. He said, guess what he called me at school? An A-H. And he knew, he just wanted to say the word. I said, well, we don't say that. And he said, yeah, you know what he called me? And he wanted to say it again. I went, we don't say that word. Ever.
Right, but he just wanted to say it again and again. Because there's nothing cuter than an early cursor.
Right.
Speaking of the word you just mentioned, the original derivation of that was arsehole. A-R-S-E-H-O-L-E. Or arsehool.
That's sort of
sounds Dutch to me.
That's a great word, you have to admit. It's such a great thing to call someone who cut you off in traffic.
Well, but let's be honest. The money shot is the F word.
Oh, yeah.
Heck yeah, it is.
The origin of the F word, one of the hardest to trace, banned from early work in dictionaries. Etymologists from various sources and etymologies from various sources all agree the word probably developed from various Germanic languages, because you know the Germans are nothing but fun. In Dutch, it means to breed. Norwegians have a word which means to copulate. Swedish have a word which means to copulate or strike. There's also a Swedish version of the word which means male genitalia. The Penguin Dictionary, I'm not familiar with it, made a bold move to include it in their 1966 editions. But here's a couple of the phrases that many of you probably use every day and their origins. 1916, the first time somebody went, ooh, I F that up.
Yeah, I like it.
1929, first time anybody was known to tell someone to F off. In 1960, I got to tell you, I don't know this phrase. F all? F dash all?
No, I
don't know that I've ever heard it.
Mm-mm.
You hippies from the 60s. So there you go. It's a little cursing corner, a little bit of behind the scenes. Where do your favorite curse words come from? Now you get out there and wash your mouth out with soap, audience. And we'll get traffic here from Mary. And then we'll come back, get you the 9 o'clock hour with CLTV coming up. And my friend Laura Caldwell, who's going to tell you more about the work that her students do with her on exonerating prisoners who are wrongfully convicted. Pretty amazing. All coming up on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
9:10, back in the Allstate Showcase Studio with one of my favorite people in the whole world. And one hot redhead. It's my friend Laura Caldwell.
Hello, good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I have a book out today. It's, you know.
Okay, easy on the plug. Settle down.
No, I mean, that's just the dream, you know. So I guess I was thinking about, well, I have a little bit of a cough. Then I thought that doesn't compare to your illness. And
oh, I'm fine. Or I'm fine. Dreams. You're fine. We're fine.
Yeah.
Now, here's the deal. Laura Caldwell was cruising along as an attorney and a professor. Minding her own business. She wasn't hurting anybody. But she had this voice. This voice in her head said, you must write. Mm-hmm. You must write. You must write. Like many of you who probably always said, oh, I wish I could write a book. I feel like I have a book in me. How many books have you had in you that you got out of you now?
This is number 16.
How about a hand for Laura Caldwell? Wow. 16 fantastic books. Stephen King called, said, slow down a little. those include great fiction with a recurring character, but also include a tremendous amount of work, which is revolves around your latest book, where you have worked with achieving the goal with a bunch of great students of exonerating wrongfully convicted inmates. And how many have you helped get out of jail now?
So you know, we work with people who've been exonerated after they get out to help them start over. And I, as you know, worked on a case involving a young man named Jovan and helped him to get out. And then what my law students and I have been doing is helping people start over, get their records cleared, and also go down to Springfield and tell them and bring these exonerees and tell them how hard it is to start over. And so we've been able to pass legislation as well. And it's been a challenging but interesting project. And we've probably, to answer your question, worked with about 50 or more exonerees now.
How about that?
Yeah.
And do you have any idea amongst the others in this community, do we have any idea what percentage of those who are sitting in jail possibly are wrongfully convicted?
We know that if you look at multiple various studies that with different methodology, the sort of guess is that educated guess is that we're getting it right 95% of the time.
Wow.
Which seems great. This is a human system. If we can get it right 95% of the time.
Yeah, but that means 5% of the time we're getting it wrong and somebody's sitting in jail. And you know, we had the Operation Greylord folks on a couple of weeks ago. And you think about the corrupt judges and lawyers of the 80s putting people away. But now we're not so much worried about corruption. We're worried about incompetence or mistakes being made. What do we know?
Well, you know, like I said, it is a human system. We really don't necessarily we know that there's like five or six main causes of wrongful convictions. And one of those, you know, it can be anything from mistaken identification to bad testimony about arson. And yes, it can also be what we call government misconduct, which is either some police or prosecutorial misconduct. But what we know is that the majority of those folks go into the system for the right reasons and they're doing a great job. And it's got to be addressed. But there is no big, unfortunately, it's not the sexiest thing because there isn't one big bad wolf.
Right. And because of that, you have to look, as your students with their incredible energy do, and other groups do as well, you have to look for those who need help, who don't have resources. Because the truth is, when somebody goes to jail, over the course of time, no matter how innocent they are and how many people believe in them, a lot of folks fall away. And if they eventually are exonerated, this was one of the great educational moments of my life when you told me what a prisoner walks out of jail with.
Yeah, it's interesting. This new book, Anatomy of Innocence, tells the little snapshots through sort of some great writers about what it's like to be wrongfully convicted, what it's like to get the knock on the door that says, hey, could you come answer some questions?
Right.
And what it's like to hear the word guilty when every single exoneree thinks they'll hear not guilty. And then we also have some great writers writing at the end of the stories with exonerees to talk about, yeah, what it's like when you walk out. Antoine Day, a client of mine at Loyola Law School, we were together over the weekend, and he was telling, we were with John Mankiewicz, who's one of the head writers for House of Cards, who came to the Innocence Conference this weekend just to see everything. And Antoine said, yeah, they walked me down a hall into a room with a pile of clothes where, you know, people had been arrested in these clothes, so they were just piles and piles. Like, said, pick something out. He put on a sweatshirt, put on some sweatpants, and walked out into a rainy day. You know, when my client Jovan got out, somebody gave him a bus card. Antoine got nothing. He literally got walked onto 26 in California.
And we'll hear about settlements after extensive litigation. And you think about the fact that people's lives have been stolen, whether it's 5 years or 10 years or 20 years or more. And we ought to be having parades for them and handing them jobs and doing whatever we can to say we're sorry for what happened. But even in the case of a maximum win in the state of Illinois, which is how much?
Well, I mean, maximum sentencing up to life. Is that what you mean?
No. Like a maximum.
Oh,
we're
yes.
Sorry. We're sorry we put you in jail.
Max. Here's, in Illinois, $21
million. Yeah, $21 million. How many people have ever gotten that?
Two. Two people have gotten around 20. The majority, 2 million, 3 million, 6 million. Mm-hmm. But remember, there's a lot of people that work on these cases. So they will, you know, after all the costs and attorneys and who do the really hard work, after that's all paid, they'll, you know, maybe end up with, you know, 50% of that. But
yeah, and by the way, 50% of $6 million is $3 million if you're sitting around going, well, that's a lot of money. No, it's not. Not when you've had your life stolen.
And let's also remember that less than a third actually get those settlements, Steve. I mean, okay, Schaefer's in the house.
Schaefer's a great
we
dog.
We got to tell the tourists on Michigan Avenue.
Schaefer can make all the noise Schaefer wants. Schaefer and I go way back. Schaefer can make all the noise Schaefer wants. All right, so here's the deal. The book's called Anatomy of Innocence, Testimonies of the Wrongfully Convicted. You've got some amazing people who have contributed here. And what was the process?
Right? I mean, it's amazing.
It's crazy.
Well, you know, in addition to doing After Innocence work, I write novels, and I go to these mystery conferences where we, you know, mystery writers literally get together. I mean, Stephen King is there sometimes, and Lee Child, and Scott Turow, and Grisham, and Patterson, and we get together, and we talk craft, and we talk business, and hopefully there are fans there. And as I was getting into the After Innocence work, first the authors started coming to me with, hey, I got a question. I just got Rick Mofina, a great author. I just got something from him yesterday. Okay, here's my five questions about if someone got out. So I was kind of helping on plot points. But at some point, these authors started saying, gosh, if I can help in some ways, is there something I could write? And I was like, no, I don't, unless you want to take on one of these books. And I can tell you they're these stories are so, as you know, Steve, you've been a long champion of this cause, and these stories are so complex. So I just didn't know how any of these writers could really contribute. But it finally occurred that it might be nice to, now that we're starting to be aware that wrongful convictions happen, thanks to things like, well, frankly, people like Northwestern and University of Chicago and people who are getting people out, but also Making a Murderer. And Serial.
That's a good point.
You know, we now, the average person now knows, of course, it's a human system. Of course there are wrongful convictions. We know that. But what is it like to walk through that? What's it like to be behind the skin, behind the eyes, in the soul of the person who's getting wrongfully accused and then wrongfully convicted? And it just occurred, wow, we could come up with stages and just have some of these authors each tell a quick snapshot. And then again, it's not hopefully too much for the reader. I know a lot of people told me with Making a Murderer that they were heartbroken in many ways. And, you know, we don't want to break people's hearts and we don't want to overload people. So we thought, let's pair up these writers. Let's pair up the head writer for House of Cards with Jerry Miller. And let's pair up Lee Child with a very Jack Reacher exoneree who was on death row. And they were all so amazing. So that's kind of how it came about.
Yeah, and it's a great way to do the narrative end of this, because everybody tells a piece of the arc of the characters in the book who are real people who have been absolutely criminalized in the worst possible way. What did Philip Margolin do?
Philip Margolin wrote an amazing piece with Bill Dillon, who is a guy. So Philip Margolin is an attorney. He's in Portland and a great thriller writer. And he's worked on some innocence cases. And we kind of like to challenge some of these authors. And we said, we're going to put you with a guy who became his own attorney. So we need you to not write. We're not going to have you write where one of the attorneys came in like Superman and got this person out. This guy had to be his own jailhouse lawyer, and it's exquisite. It's exquisite. And Arthur Miller, we have the first unpublished Arthur Miller piece since his death.
That?
Yeah, worked with the estate. They've been very lovely. So I technically, Steve, I'm Arthur Miller's editor. I edited Arthur. I'm just
saying. Well, it's about time somebody got to that hack.
Right?
Scott Turow and Barry Scheck. Barry Scheck, how do I know the name? Well, Barry Scheck, of course, DNA pioneer who was on the OJ team in the 90s, but don't prejudge, know that through his DNA work, he's done amazing things. What's the name of his foundation or his thing?
He and Peter Neufeld started the Innocence Project in New York, and they do all DNA exonerations. And then because of them and because of Northwestern, and now there's thankfully, not enough, but, you know, organizations around the country now who do DNA and other types of exonerations.
And Scott Turow, who I'm told listens to this show quite a bit, and I thank him for that. You know, couldn't be better than to have Scott Turow on the cover either. I normally say get two copies, you're careless, you lose one. Get three, and then give one to somebody else and have them buy two more. It's Anatomy of Innocence, Testimonies of the Wrongfully Convicted. Where do we get it?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore, or just visit anatomyofinnocence.com. And we've got our events up there, and I'll be joining Scott Turow, or I'm lucky enough to have him join me at Loyola Law School this Friday at 5 o'clock if people would like to come out.
All right, I want to ask you about the other end of your life and when the next novel is out and what you're doing in that part of the world, and give you a chance to laud any of these kids who do such great work for you as well. More with Laura Caldwell coming up. Actually, more with Schaefer coming up, and Schaefer's human, Laura Caldwell. That's next on 720 Schaefer's WGN. Human. Minutes with the great Laura Caldwell, live in Eagle State Showcase Studio. Andrea, say hi.
Hey, Laura. We were just chatting, petting a little puppy dog here. Laura, I'm sure you have, I don't want to say a list, but a lot of people emailing you and contacting you, especially when it comes to the Innocence Project and your work for the wrongfully convicted. How do you discern which cases you're going to take? Who's, you know, because realistically, you're going to get some people who are saying, oh, I'm innocent too, and might not be. How do you discern all that?
You know, we are, at this point, what we are doing is discerning if someone, well, on one hand, we're also doing some community work now, but then we're also trying to discern if someone has been exonerated. So in other words, Northwestern, University of Chicago, law firms like Lovey and Lovey and People's Law Office, what they do, you're right, they get, I mean, I get hundreds of these letters. I basically write everyone back and say, you've got to call these people first. And I know that it's an agonizing process. But what they do is they have to have checklists. And if, frankly, some of the attorneys were talking from Northwestern this weekend, they once had a bad arson case where they knew this was bad arson testimony. So if they get another one, frankly, even if that guy sounds innocent, they can't take it because they have to show the government and some of the grants that they get that they're taking on a number of different types of cases.
And you brought Amanda Knox to town. She was here, was it earlier this year or late last year?
Yeah, October of last year and December the year before, and I saw her this weekend. She's doing great.
How is she? That was an amazing, incredible story. And if you haven't seen the Netflix documentary, it is riveting.
Isn't it?
Will not be able to put your iPad down. It was so great watching that. She's
doing fantastic. She and her partner, Chris, are working on a virtual reality TV show. She likes to write fiction, but with wrongful conviction. You know, it's very interesting. She is such an advocate for exonerees now. That's mm-hmm. what she wants to do. But I find that people still are confused about her guilt or innocence sometimes, which is, frankly, kind of, you know, nuts at this point. But
And see the documentary because it's so great because they interview, you know, the Italian police commander who basically said, well, you know, I felt like she did it. A woman would.
He's a complete dirtball.
Oh, completely, right, Steve?
Completely filthy.
Well, a man wouldn't have done that. So it had to be her.
You know, frankly, right? What disturbed me about that was that twice he brought up Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes. Uh-huh. And I love Sherlock Holmes, and I've been brought into this Sherlock Holmes writer's world. And it disturbed me that that Italian police chief, now that's fiction. So, you know, when he was saying, and I know that the woman would not kill like this, yeah. She would do this. It
yes.
was like appalling.
It was unbelievable that was even allowed as evidence.
Amanda did not get any, that she didn't, you know, profit from that documentary, and she got a million offers, and what she wanted to do was make sure that somebody told the whole story. So I thought that was really impressive. She wanted, and I do think that documentary is amazing.
That's great.
I'm glad she's doing great. So let's talk about you and the novel writing business. What else are you working on?
I am not working on a novel right now. I've got a lot
what?
Of... No, isn't that crazy?
What?
Yeah. I'm kind of working on some possible TV projects.
These are shows involving me?
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. The handsome, debonair, suave, smooth-talking DJ
yep,
who... Dot,
me.
Dot, dot. What
Sounds
would you like
me.
The plot? Just tell me what you're...
I think the traditional thing, supermodels, fast cars, you know, things of that nature.
Yachts.
The things that you know me best for.
Sure, sure.
What are the TV projects? Can you say, or would you have to kill
well,
us?
Well, you know, frankly, we are talking to a couple different people, nothing serious, but this Anatomy of Innocence about it being a docuseries. You know, something like a Netflix Making a Murderer, actually, that was something that went over the course of a season. We're talking about maybe making these sort of individual documentaries, but having it be a docuseries. So
in other words, following them once they get out and kind of helping them on their way?
You know, giving more of each of the whole story. But what we really like is pulling in the author's style and how they see things. So, you know, like Lee Child, when he wrote this piece with Kirk Bloodsworth, you kind of feel this Jack Reacher, man of mystery, cool dude mm-hmm. who's blowing through town.
A lot like me.
A lot like you, exactly. And so, I don't know, what we've kind of been batting around is if we did a TV project, could we use authors to, you know, give their own spin? So, you would hopefully get L.A. Noir from Michael Connelly and maybe some Midwest Gothic knowledge of Chicago from Sarah Paretsky.
Sounds very cool. And most importantly, before we let you go, what's going on with Schaefer?
Oh, Schaefer. She's such a sweet boo. Well, you know, she went to Germany with me last year, and now she's just really disappointed at the lack of international travel.
Does she bark in German?
Like, this is exciting. She does a little, you know, no and yes and where's the bathroom. You know, the stuff everybody learns. Thank you.
She hates the TSA.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, as everyone does. Mm-hmm. No.
And if there's ever an accident in the wrong place, does Schaefer say in dog talk, I know nothing!
You will not have the talk.
Yes, yes. Well, it's great. It's great to have you on anytime, you know that. And
Thank you.
And, I miss you, and I'm glad to see you, and congratulations on all the success.
Continue
tell everybody the name of the book
recover.
Again.
Anatomy of Innocence, Testimonies of the Wrongfully Convicted, and it's on sale today, and we've got events all over the next few months, so you can see it at anatomyofinnocence.com.
And get three copies, one for you, one because you're careless, you lose one, and an extra one to give to somebody else, along with the directive to go buy one for themselves, too.
I got one for you.
This is how we spread the good news. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. That's our friend Laura Caldwell. Laura, how do people get a hold of you or follow you or do any of that?
LauraCaldwell.com, please.
Okay, that's all you need to know. We'll come back with the big story next. And then I got some Amazon products that are from a list of cool stuff you may not know about on Amazon on the day they officially announced that they're going to start charging sales tax on April 1st. The day of that story coming up, Bill and Wendy at 10 on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Bill and Wendy at 10. Amazon's going to start charging tax across the country on April 1st. I assume everybody on the show shops Amazon a little or a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm related to someone who shops Amazon a fair amount.
Andrea, how much do you spend on Amazon in a month?
I don't know. Maybe $50 or so.
$50.
I know. I need to get Prime because I'm always using someone else's Prime.
You should get Prime.
I just need to get Prime and bite the bullet. Just because
I think it's
$99
and you got a lot of benefits in the old Prime situation.
Yeah, especially around the holidays.
My daughter is addicted to Prime. She's crazy with the Prime.
Mm. Plus, you get the music, you get the movies.
Yeah.
Stream TV. Yeah.
But this is going to cost her big bucks, don't you think?
Well, tax?
Yeah.
Well,
tax.
I mean, you would have to pay tax if you bought it at the store. You know what? I think I'm okay with it. I had a big issue with it before, but I guess I'm fine with it. Now, if they slap another tax on top of it, you know, like the bottled water tax, just to tax the tax. Does that make sense?
Then tax to double tax?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Instead of just paying tax, it would be like tax because you're using Amazon
You're going to start like a new Boston Tea Party, but it'd be at like Burnham Harbor, and you would throw your phones and your iPads into the lake. Huh?
I throw someone else's phone and iPad into the lake in protest. Yes.
I order everything, every single thing on Amazon. I just ordered a 52-count box of fruit roll-ups yesterday.
Are you serious?
For Pat?
Yeah, no, for the kids. It was like $23 because you can't get a 52-count box at the store. I guess maybe if I went to one of those big stores.
You go
to
Costco, sure.
Yeah, I don't go. There's too many people there. It gets delivered in 2 days to my house.
Free.
So do you?
I'll pay some extra tax.
Do you leave the house, Sandberg, other than come to the show and go home?
I do because I go to yoga.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
But right, I try not to leave otherwise.
Steve, she drops the kids off at the movies.
Right.
I did do that that one time.
Right.
To go to yoga.
To go to yoga.
Now, that's fine. All right. So, you know, the Amazon wish list, these are the most popular products from the wish list. So you guys may want some of these. Some of them are kind of hard to describe on the radio. But what about a ravioli spoon for your counter that looks like a ravioli?
I love ravioli.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just had some last night.
Mm. You like that or is it a little too cute?
That's too cute for me.
Cutesy. Yeah, I don't need that. Cutesy. Just a slotted spoon is fine.
I don't know if you're a cat people. Do we have any cat people on the show?
I don't mind.
Nope.
I don't.
All right, moving
I don't
on.
Mind cats.
I don't hate cats like you guys do.
Move on.
I used to have a kitten.
How about this? A ceramic bird that sits in the middle of your freshly baked pie and emits internal pie steam from its beak so the filling doesn't bubble over.
Mm.
No, what?
That's,
why?
That's super cheesy.
It's a steam evaporator from the pie.
Well, that happens if you bake. If you bake like an apple pie, it can bubble over. That's why I always put a tray under it when I'm baking.
Yeah, me too.
I don't bake.
I don't know. That's
I don't need that.
Isn't the weight of the bird going to kill the pie?
Well, the bird's actually baked in the pie.
Yeah, you put it in there.
You know why
you
got
a nursery rhyme?
It's like sing it. No, it's sing a song of sixpence.
Blackbirds baked in a pie.
Dave knows it.
How about a pack of all natural deodorant wipes that are perfect for using on the go and they won't stain your clothes?
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. No. I wouldn't buy them, but
well, that's because you carry a purse full of junk, so you just throw it right in there.
You know, it's not junk. There's makeup and hairspray and a couple of brushes.
Put your deodorant at home. Why do you need a to-go deodorant?
I do have a little mini to-go deodorant.
Well,
just
in case something happens during the day.
If you go to the gym or something. Yeah.
No. If you have to freshen up in the middle of the day.
Yeah, I guess. I wouldn't buy that.
I just
bought
home.
Fruit Roll-Ups.
Steve,
I do just go home.
Steve, can you feel the judgment? Can you feel it wafting? Okay, good.
Not surprised at all. Bathtub caddy that holds all your me time essentials. Dave, I know you and I like to take baths. You know, long, luxurious soaks.
Mm-hmm. I love a bath.
Yeah.
This is a wood caddy that fits over your tub. Very stylish. It's got a place for your cell phone. It's got slats in the middle. It's got a book stand.
Wait, why would you
place?
Have your cell phone
your
in there?
Wine.
Is it teak?
Well, my wine.
Out of curiosity, Steve, is it teak?
Yes.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would buy that.
Dave, you need your cell phone because when you're laying there, you might sometimes need to check social media or change the music or there's some things you need to do.
Okay.
Yeah, or text somebody downstairs.
Good to know.
And I like the idea of a caddy because I don't know about you guys, but our bathtub, the big soaker tub, I don't like products sitting out because then you'd see them all the time. Mm-hmm. So I always have to pull the products out in order to take the bath. So if there was a nice caddy to just...
I have a little basket next to my bathtub with the bath salts and the soap and the loofah.
I kind of put them on the ridge of the bathtub.
Sounds like
fall in during my bath.
Sounds like you're describing my bath.
I know, right? That's luxurious bath salts.
That's why I don't like them on the edge, Mayor.
Yeah,
that's what happens.
Let's see. How about an easy-to-assemble storage organizer? You could use it as a shelf, a bookcase, closet storage, or a room divider in smaller rooms. It would be perfect for your kids.
What kids?
Your kids.
Oh, no. Wait, I'm not putting any self thing we put together as a room divider.
Steve, do you think Mary shops on Amazon for anybody other than herself? Come on.
Well, the fruit roll-ups.
Well, the fruit roll-ups,
fruit roll-ups is for them.
No.
And Patrick said right before he left on Sunday night, he said to me, "We need more fruit roll-ups." I said, "Okay." I got 52.
Oh, how about an all-natural bamboo charcoal air purifying bag that gets rid of room, car, and pet stank for up to 2 years?
Ooh, that's good for hockey families.
Yeah. $9.95.
Well, you know what? We're a hockey family. We're now using Freshwave because they sent me some
Freshwave's
products.
Freshwave's great.
Mm-hmm. And it does really get rid of that smell.
A kit for securely mounting your smartphone to a bike handlebar.
Ooh, Catherine has that.
You have to be careful with those. I've seen people with those for a couple of reasons, because obviously they're watching, you know, whatever they're watching instead of paying attention to the bike path. But I've also seen people hit bumps, and especially in Chicago.
And it flies off?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have one with Velcro. It works really well.
Didn't that happen to Enid? Didn't you lose your phone when we did Bike the Drive?
I did momentarily, yes, and I almost caused a major crash in Lakeshore Drive.
He had one of those things.
There were no cars there, though, Dave.
Yeah,
no,
but there's a thousand bikes.
All these bikes right
Dave's cell phone dropped off of that thing, and he went
tumbling down.
Yep.
I don't know why this is special, but it's a car garbage can, which I will not use in the car. I'll take a plastic bag, throw stuff in there, get rid of the bag. I will not keep a garbage can in the car.
No, me neither.
Yeah, that's gross.
No. So especially the amount of time I spend in the car. And a floor mat for a welcome mat, I should say, that has no welcome in it. It says "Go away."
You know what? That might actually be for my house.
I was going to say. I hope I get you in the grab bag next year again.
That's great. Now there's some stuff that's not on the wish list, but here's a few other things you can get: a Vladimir Putin riding a bear action figure.
I would get you that, Steve.
That could be good. How about the Holy Babizzle? It's a Bible written in gangsta slang. Sandberg, this could work for you. How to traumatize your children deliberately.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, that does work for me.
There you go. And the rest of these are fairly dirty. But you go.
Tell us one dirty one.
Well, no, we're on the air. I'll tell you off the air.
Okay.
Can I tell you something? I'm looking at my most recent Amazon orders. So I just ordered these fruit roll-ups. I ordered them again. February 1st was the last time I ordered them. So we go through fruit roll-ups a lot. I ordered coffee.
Does your dentist know this?
I don't eat them. I ordered a Spirograph deluxe design set for my niece for her birthday.
I used to love the Spirograph.
Two Nerf balls. The 32-ounce Rice Krispie treat that we gave Patrick for his birthday. A jewelry cleaner.
These are all light bulbs. Fabulous gifts.
I don't know if I should say cool or run. I don't know.
Well, we're going to turn your wish list over to authorities just to make sure they're updating their files.
Okay, sounds good. Stapler, some pajama pants,
and
Powerade water
back.
Bottles.
We'll come back with Bill and Wendy next. Someone keep an eye on Sandberg on 720 WGN.